For our next panel, we have the LNG panel discussion. We have with us Sveinung Støhle, CEO of Höegh LNG, Paul Wogan, CEO of Gaslog, and Anita Odedra, Executive Vice President of Commercial at Maran Gas. So, as Mr. Ellingsen commented in his opening remarks earlier, the LNG shares have actually been the only shipping equities with positive performance so far this year as a group. Some of this might be driven by higher energy prices and oil prices, but I think it's also driven by expectations of better market prospects ahead. We think that, on our thesis, and we're reading the consensus, seems to be that the number of liquefaction projects under construction will lead to a deficit, vessel deficit, of 30 to 50 vessels by the end of this decade. So far over the summer, the spot market has improved somewhat, both round voyage economics and actual TCE rates, headline figures, have improved somewhat along with utilization. This is along with our thesis of where we see the market developing going forward, and we think that we will continue to see the market firming ahead. We've also actually seen a few longer-term contracts, which have been rare over the past couple of years. I think a good starting point for this discussion could be the largest concern we're facing when we're talking to investors about the LNG market seems to be where, or the demand side, where will the gas go? Recently, or over the last 5 to 10 years, the biggest takers or the biggest growers of LNG imports have been South Korea and Japan, with China increasing their share significantly. But the feeling we have is that Korea and Japan have actually been decreasing last year and so far this year, and China doesn't seem set to take all the volumes which are coming on stream with the new liquefaction projects. So could we start with, perhaps, where do you think all this gas will go, if not to Japan, South Korea, and China?
Yeah, I would start. If you look at the big picture, there will be added roughly 140 million tons of new production capacity over the next 3-4 years. And that's on top of the existing 2016 number, which is around 270. So a very significant increase, mainly from Australia and from the US. And to your question, where is this going? Well, first of all, the fact that Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, the traditional big buyers are not growing doesn't mean they're not taking. They will still remain the largest markets, with Japan taking around 85, 90 million tons a year of LNG out of a current total of 270, as I said. But I think what's going on in the market right now is very, very intriguing in that LNG is finding its way into markets that only 12 months ago didn't exist. To give one example, Egypt, which was a major exporter, today is a major importer. We put in place the first import terminal, Bergersen did the second. Today, Egypt imports the equivalent of 10 million tons a year of LNG. So where is the gas going? I think the gas will be going to new markets in South America, Caribbean, the Middle East, and Africa. I'm not sure if you've seen, but this morning there's an announcement that Total will set up a new LNG import facility in Côte d'Ivoire. So clearly the major drivers that are there, and this would be good for the whole industry, is that LNG is and will be available at affordable prices, meaning this will be the major driver for demand, and the volumes will keep increasing. So my view is, Höegh LNG's view is, the markets will come from importers that have not been in the market before, or from some importers which have been in the market but see that they now can afford to buy a lot more LNG than they previously did, for example, China and India. And because of that, for the next few years, the new production, it will flow, but it will go to markets that previously took a very small percentage of the total. Thank you.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. I mean, if you look at this year, I think we're seeing Japan and Korea down a couple of percentage points on last year. But if you look at the price-sensitive markets, by which the biggest ones by far are India and China, both those markets are up by 30% this year. So the fact that we've got abundant LNG and we have a very cost-competitive LNG is opening up markets. I mean, I'll just take it as an example. SR Group, a couple of months ago, announced that they were reinstating one of their power stations, gas turbine power stations, because LNG made it, the prices it's at, made it profitable for them to start up that production again. And so the pricing, I think, is of LNG is a really important point when you're looking at where's the new production going to go. The second thing is, this market's changing incredibly quickly. It used to be, if you wanted to buy LNG, you had to go to the majors, you had to sign up for 20 years, and you had to sign up for, I don't know, 1 million, 2 million tons per annum. Those days have gone. People can go and buy from the majors. The majors, the traders are all looking, how do I place my molecules? How do I get my molecules into a market? They're willing to do it for much shorter periods, and they're willing to do it on much lower volumes. So if you like, the credit that you have to put in place to be able to get access to the LNG is very different now to what it was. And again, I think that's opening up the market. And so the final thing then, I think, is the infrastructure. And you know, people like Herg and hopefully ourselves are there able to open up these markets by using floating regasification. So I don't have a concern about where this LNG is going to go. I think the abundance and the price of it is creating its own markets. What we have to make sure is that we can put the infrastructure in place cost effectively and quickly to enable that product to get into those markets.
I think one of the most important things to remember right now is that we're in a down cycle. But we've been in down cycles before. It's a very cyclical industry, whether it's the supply side, whether it's the demand side. So everyone's focusing on a supply overhang of LNG over the next few years. The challenge is that the demand for global gas is growing year on year by 3.5% CAGR. At that point, there will become a point where the demand will outstrip the supply. And so I don't feel worried that there will not be a home for this LNG. We're going through a couple of years of hardship right now, but I know that the demand for gas is very, very strong. It's robust. It's a clean bridging fuel to renewables eventually. And therefore, it's going to be a very strong industry. The challenge that we have in this industry right now is that buyers need the confidence to buy LNG for the period in which they will be short. But they don't want to contract for that LNG at very high prices, and they're trying to, at the moment, while prices are low, figure out what the best index for themselves to buy on is. And that's creating something of a conflict between buyers and sellers, because nobody knows what that price index should be at this particular time. But is there a future for gas? Absolutely. Is the future bright? Absolutely.
So do you agree with the thesis of LNG prices staying lower for longer, generally speaking?
The spot price is low, yes, it clearly is. There's an oversupply, and so supply-demand economics absolutely prove that prices are going to stay low for the time being. There has to come a point that prices have to get to a position that fund new LNG liquefaction projects, because no one's going to build a project on a purely speculative basis. It's just far too expensive. So yes, we recognize that shorter and shorter contracts can exist, but at the same time, the actual economics of building a liquefaction plant will not support selling that on an absolute spot basis. So yes, prices have to come to a point that allows sellers the confidence to build.
So you're not fearing that, similar to what we've seen for LPGs this year, where there is a lot of projects, but it's not being shipped due to the low product pricing differentials. Is that something that you're fearing that we might see also for LNG going forward?
If I may, no, I don't think so. For the simple reason that for all existing liquefaction projects, the marginal cost, which is what they will be looking at in a low price environment, is simply the operating cost of the plant plus the cost of the gas, if there is a cost of the gas. And so if you take one of the existing plants, let's say Nigeria LNG, I haven't looked at those numbers for many years, but I would suspect that the operating cost is somewhere below $1 per MMBTU. Cost for the gas, maybe 50 cents. So $1.50. The current spot price is between 5 and 6. If you add shipping, there's still a very, very healthy netback, and the gas will flow. And that is the case for all existing plants. The formula out of the U.S., of course, is somewhat different in the sense that people have signed up for a liquefaction fee. But if you signed up that for 20 years in the current environment, I think most of those people will consider that also to be a sunk cost. So you pay $2.50, $3 for the gas, Henry Hub, plus a few cents to get it to the plant, plus the marginal cost of production. You still have gas available at $3, and the price is still 5 or 6. Will the gas flow? Yes, it will. So no, to your question, I don't believe that you will see any shut-ins. If that would happen, prices would have to go close to zero. And I don't see that in any of the scenarios that we look at.
Very good. So, I mean, the demand side then looks very firm for LNG shipping going forward. How about the supply side? There are currently about 120 vessels in the order book. Do you see any potentials for further orders here going forward?
Well, I think we've seen 4 orders in the last 10 months is how we've seen it. And I think that's as a consequence of what we're seeing in the market. And what Anita was saying earlier, I pick up on, is that how do you price this product? What's the price that people will pay for it in terms of the index? Is it Henry Hub? Is it oil indexed? Is it MBP? And what's happened over the last 12 months is that there's been a sort of a standoff in terms of people not really understanding when they've taken the cargoes from the US, they've committed to them, where's it going to go? And how much shipping are they going to need? And so what we've seen is the customers actually like a little bit like rabbits in a headlight, saying we don't really know what to do right now, and so we're not going to take any shipping on. And so what that's done is the owners have all said, fine, you're not going to commit to shipping, we're not going to go out and build ships right now until we understand where this market's going. So what that's done is we've seen very few orders over the last 12 months. Now, an LNG ship takes anywhere, between 3 years and maybe 2.5 now with what's happening in the yards. So if you want to order an LNG ship right now, you're not going to get that ship before 2019. So we already know, unlike a lot of shipping areas, we already know what the supply is going to be out to 2018. As we see the production coming on in the US, we see that we're going to be actually running very short of ships in 2018. And it comes back to the point you were making earlier where we're saying we think there's anywhere between 30 and 50 ships short as we build out this production. So, at some point, the customers will come back and will be willing to take ships for longer term. At some point, people will go to the shipyards. But the longer that takes, the better that is for our market. The other thing is, what we're seeing is customers now much more willing to take existing ships rather than saying we must have a new building every time we do a new plant. So again, I think that's very good for our market. So I'm really happy that we haven't seen a lot of ordering recently. But again, I'll be happy if we do see ordering when it's linked into new charters.
When you're saying there's certainty about the fleet size going forward, I would agree on the order book side. But what about the existing fleet today, where of about 60% or even more than that is older steam carriers? Are they still going to be used going forward, or do you see potential for some of these being phased out, being scrapping or conversion to projects for FSRU use, FLNG, etc.?
The economics between a steamship, a tri-fuel diesel electric, and then the latest technology is quite distinct, and you can measure it, and it's very simple to work out. The challenge is that we're not going to replace this entire fleet of steamships with new builds immediately. As Paul said, LNG ship owners are quite disciplined and show quite a bit of restraint, unlike perhaps Mr. Trump in the US election. And therefore, you know, we're not going to see LNG ship owners going out and replacing these steamships immediately. Some of these ships are not very old, and the inefficiencies absolutely depend on the voyage that you're taking. If you're taking very long voyages, then yes, a new generation ship could be very, very effective. If you're doing very short voyages and the gas prices remain as low as they are, steamships are actually very efficient under that scenario. So it's very economically driven, it's very trade driven, it's very, very company driven. And so I don't necessarily see a need for the entire steam fleet to be replaced anytime soon. Now, will some of the first generation steam, the really, really old ones, do something else? Yes, that will happen. We're seeing some sales and we're seeing some scrappings and things like that. But we're not necessarily seeing wholesale replacement of steamships that are just 10 years old. Some of them will go to conversions, but we're not thinking that all of that fleet will go into conversion straight away.
So, but do you think we'll see a two-tiered or even three-tiered market?
There is already a two-tiered market. There is, if you look at every broker report, there is a rate for steamships, there is a rate for TFDE ships. Your question, I assume, means will there be a three-tiered rate for the
right.
for the slow-speed diesel ships? The ships that the MEGI and the XDF, which is the next generation of propulsion that's coming on right now, they're not being built necessarily speculatively, to be honest. They're being built specifically for projects or for customers who have requested them. There are a couple that will be speculative. So there isn't a huge fleet of MEGI and XDF that will create immediately a three-tier market. But traders will value them differently when they run their economics.
It's interesting. I seem to remember, top of my mind, you have a few of these open vessels coming in 2019, right?
We do, yes.
You do, yeah. So are you looking for long-term employment for those, or are you excited by the prospects of having them actually open and being able to play them with the positive outlook that we have?
As Paul mentioned earlier, this sort of restraint in the buyers but not buying cargoes and the shipbuilders not building ships will create a position in 18 and 19 where the market goes short. And we're placed very well in that period for these ships. So I don't feel a need today to go out and fix these ships without something very, very compelling to drive me to do that. So I think that we see a bright future, and I think that we can wait to find good homes for these ships.
Just one comment to that from what Anita mentioned. I think, well, first of all, we, as Höegh LNG, we are not in that market, but we, of course, follow this market very closely. On steam ships, I think it's dangerous to generalize too much. There's steam ships and then there's new steam ships. And, of course, when you have maybe 10% of the existing fleet are steam ships which are more than 30 years old, obviously those are the ones that will go out of the market. And over the last 12 months, we've seen that. And we've sold a couple. Other people have sold. Some of them have already been scrapped. And it is my view that is the part of the fleet that will go out. When you have ships which are 10 years old and steam turbine, they're still very, very good ships. What you need to do is to make sure that you trade them in the right segment. and then you will still be able to make a decent rate.
And switching gears a bit back to the demand side, which we touched upon earlier, with all these new regions and markets for prospective LNG imports, the prospects for FSRUs look very exciting these days. Are there any specific regions, countries, or areas where you see the highest demand or expectations for new projects going forward?
Well, first of all, as you said from the introduction, obviously, in order to be able to import LNG, you need a terminal. And as Höegh LNG, that is what we provide. We have the largest, newest, most efficient fleet, and we have today about one-third of the market. If you look at what's been installed for new import terminals the last 3 years, in two out of three cases, the terminal has been floating. So clearly, the market prefers this solution. We have proven that it works, and it's very efficient. You compare a land-based facility, which sometimes can take up to 10 years to put in place, we can do it in 6 months. So this is what the market wants today. And the regions where the FSRU has been chosen and continues to be chosen are regions where LNG imports basically were not done before. So the Middle East, for example. There are today FSRUs in operation in Egypt, in Israel, in Jordan, in Dubai, in Abu Dhabi, in Pakistan. You go back 3-4 years, they were not there. So clearly, those are markets that will continue to develop. And in South America in particular, we see a lot of activity in that region. We will install our next FSRU in Colombia in a couple of weeks. The energy minister in Colombia said last week he wants a second. So will this growth continue? Yes, it will. And as I said earlier, the main reason for that is very simply that gas is available at very affordable prices. If you want to import it now, not 10 years from now, the only solution is to do a floating terminal. So those regions, the Middle East, South America, of course also Asia, there, I think India in particular is a very large potential. That market is extremely price sensitive. If the price is $15 per MMBTU, they buy 20 million ton. If it's five, they buy all they can get their hands on. So that is what is going on in that market right now. And in order for that to work, they will need new terminals. So main markets, Middle East, South America, Caribbean, and Southeast Asia.
Paul, I presume you would agree with you have spent some time talking about entering the FSRU business as well lately.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Wood Mackenzie report recently, they highlighted 60 potential new markets for FSRUs. Now, quite obviously, not all of those markets are going to come to fruition. But what's interesting is, you know, you plot those on a map, you look, it's across the globe. And I think there are three areas where this is having an effect. One is there's still 140 million tons equivalent of electricity generation, which is done via oil rather than via gas. And I think that's a market, especially as you see LNG being very competitively priced, that is open to be taken. The second markets you've got are the where you have indigenous gas, which is running out. The UK is a great example. Bangladesh, where we're seeing them looking for FSRUs, is another example. And the third one is where you want security of supply. And there's a big push in the European Union right now at the governmental level to ensure security of supply of gas into Europe and not to be reliant on Russian gas wholly. So, you know, it's across the globe, and it's in a number of different areas that we see that we're going to have the gas penetration. And so that's why we think it's an interesting area for us to become involved in. We think it's going to grow. And we think the main thing is to be able to get that infrastructure in quickly and cost effectively to enable the gas to flow, which again would help our shipping.
So you would say that there is definitely room for more entrants into the FSRU space without this affecting really the economics, which are quite good.
We think so, and we hope so.
Sveinung, would you agree?
Well, I think I do share that view. Obviously, we will, as Höegh LNG, definitely fight to grow our market share as we have done. But I think the most important to keep in mind here is that it's a small segment which is growing very quickly. And for me and for Höegh LNG, I think the most important for us is to pick the right projects to develop and to win, because these projects do take a long time and they do cost money. So picking the right projects, making the right decisions for Höegh LNG is the most important. There will be new entrants. The market is growing. And as Paul said, they are working hard to try to get into this segment. I see that as quite normal development in a growing market. So I do not have any major concerns with that.
So in terms of growth and the capital markets, if we switch gears a bit here, both the RMLPs have recouped from the lows we saw in the early parts of this year and getting back to a territory where we've at least historically seen you being able to drop down. Do you think that you will be able to do drop downs now going forward to fund your growth prospects?
Well, I mean, a month ago we actually raised $54 million dollars at our MLP. I think we were the first marine MLP to come back, if you like, from the downturn that came around from the energy market. I think we were the last MLP to raise funds before the downturn in the energy market. So, you know, our view is for good MLPs with good visibility of cash flow and with strong counterparties that this market is already open. And I think along with probably Höegh, we're probably the two companies right now who could utilize the MLPs because of the way we set them up and because of the backing that they have in terms of the contract flow, etc.
I certainly share that view. I mean, our MLP today is trading at levels which definitely makes a potential transaction both accretive for both the holding company and the MLP. We have a long pipeline of assets that we can drop in. And we also have the longest portfolio of any marine MLP, 14 years contracted cash flows, representing something like in excess of $4 billion. So obviously we will continue to use that market when the market is open, which it is right now, and when the conditions are there for a transaction to be done. And I think, as Paul said, you know, if you have the right assets, the right contracts, the market is there, and right now it is. So yes, we will continue to do that.
Very good. And how about alternative financing? Or is this your primary goal, to drop down further vessels with contracts and grow organically through your MLPs? Or do you also have access to other capital markets?
I suppose, yeah, from Gaslog's point of view, one of the things we've been quite keen on is diversifying our access to funds. So we also just recently issued a new Norwegian bond, took out one that was maturing 2018, pushed out that. So that for us is a very interesting market. We did a sale and lease back with the Japanese recently on one of the ships, have access, obviously, good relationships and very supportive banks, and we have you know, our own access to the equity markets. So for us, it's really looking and saying, how do we have a wide range of instruments that we can use to access capital so that we're not dependent on any one, at any given time, and so that we, you know, if we see there's opportunities, we continue to grow. But certainly our MLP is our preferred route for capital right now.
Yeah, for us, for Höegh LNG, obviously we are, the holding company is listed in Oslo. So we have access to that capital market through the structure we have. We have a holding company listed in Oslo. We have an MLP listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Part of the strategy, of course, is to have basically more than one leg to stand on. These markets do change. Sometimes this market is open, sometimes that market is open. I think for us, it's, as a group, it's important to be able to access equity capital from different sources. So equity on the Oslo Stock Exchange, equity on the New York Stock Exchange, and we have also used the Nordic bond market, which for us has also worked quite well, and we will continue to do so. The important point here is for all of our companies is, of course, that this is a very capital-intensive business. If you want to continue growing the business, you have to have access to equity capital. And therefore, having a long-term strategy, which means that you can access different sources, is fundamental to be able to continue a successful growing company.
So Anita, would you care to comment, just as a private company, what sort of benefits do you see to that compared to your peers at the panel?
Well, as a private company, there are various things that we see as advantages. First of all, we have very good relationships with our banks, and therefore we have access to the funds that we need to be successful. We have done joint ventures with other counterparties, which have allowed us to access more competitive financing as well. So, you know, putting financing aside, there are other benefits from being private. The ability to make decisions very quickly, not having to justify your decisions on a quarterly basis, is very helpful. Because I don't necessarily think that the market appreciates that reporting on a quarterly basis doesn't go very well with an industry that's looking at very long-term cycles, which the LNG industry clearly is. Being private allows us to be very nimble. It allows us to work bilaterally with our counterparties, some of whom don't want perhaps some of their shipping economics publicly known, and it can make them more competitive. So there are a lot of benefits of being private. There are a lot of benefits of not being private. But I think there's space for both in this industry. And I think that, you know, we very much respect the companies who are here who are not private. And I think that we can grow equally with different sources of financing. The best thing about LNG is it's a very niche group of ship owners, very, very high quality ship owners. Safety, efficiency, those are the tenets to which we hold ourselves. And therefore, you know, we all share those basic principles. And that's what makes us successful.
Very good. So we're running out of time. But as a very quick closing remark, all three of you, what are the best opportunities you see in the LNG market today?
Well, I can certainly start. Of course, that's the FSRU business. We see... like I said earlier, a very fast-growing market. It's a market that will stay strong for as far as we can see. It's a long-term market, gives very good returns, and on the back of the production that's coming on stream and also is on stream, this is a segment that will continue to grow very quickly. And for Höegh LNG, we are a pure-play FSRU company, and we will continue to be so, and continue to build our fleet, our platform, with adding at least one FSRU per year, which is what we've done the last few years, and maybe even increasing that, depending on how we, as mentioned earlier, how successful we are in raising new capital. So for you investors, the FSRU segment, definitely the place to look. Thank you.
Paul?
Yeah, I would definitely echo Svein's remarks, but probably not surprisingly as well. I think that the actual LNG carrier space is very interesting. One of the things we were being asked for quite a while by our investors was, you know, what's happening with the long-term shipping rates? You know, we see that the spot market right now is over tonnage because the ships have delivered ahead of the projects, you know, which has brought the market down. You know, is this the new norm? Is $30,000, $40,000 a day the new norm? Well, we put our last open new building on contract recently at rates which have been reported in the mid-70s, which is, you know, around the sort of rates which have been paid for longer-term contracts over the last 10 years. And I think that was proof that the long-term market is very, very different to the short-term market. We believe that with the build-out of the U.S. infrastructure, with the need for another 40, 30, 50 ships required, that there are going to be great opportunities for us to continue to build our long-term business and our long-term contracts at very good rates of return.
I agree with both. I think the FSIU business is a great space for growth. I also think that the sort of recent stagnation in terms of buying and selling and building more ships will create a good space for optimism in the future. And I really believe that things will start moving in the next couple of years.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.